Yeah. You are listening to Warm Beer in the Cheap Seats with Casey and Big Mike. Big Mike, take it away.
What's happening? It's Friday night. Do you know where your kids are? Maybe not. They might be listening to us along with you. Good to have you on, everybody. We got a whole potpourri of subjects tonight. We'll have a list of shows turning 20 years old.
Yep.
Which makes me feel old.
Oh, when you hear them, you're going to be like, damn, I'm old.
I already feel that way. So it's just going to intensify that feeling. Big Ed has a review of a Grateful Dead album, which I'm impressed because I didn't think Big Ed was a Grateful Dead fan.
This album, yes.
And furthermore, it's good to be live and like in person next to you again.
We're live.
We were live last week as I was just several states away, up in the great state of Tennessee, the volunteer state.
Yeah.
Visiting my sister, enjoying a little time away from work and my normal day-to-day. But we still managed to get a show in, which I thought was amazing.
Yeah, we did it. Technology actually helped us out that night.
And with I don't think with any glitches. I haven't listened back to the show yet, so I don't know how I came across or how I sounded. I hope it was well. And I'm going to give another shout-out to a listener, Little Chris, friend of mine who listens. Wow. He requested some additional Sweet Melissa input. Sweet Melissa's with us tonight, kind of sitting on the sidelines.
Hi.
Had a little work done to the old mouth situation. So a little tooth action. But anyways, nothing my rambling.
Oh, no. So, see, I should have said, like, you know, maybe she learned her lesson.
Got a little pow-pow.
Yeah.
A little backhand.
Yeah. Hashtag youth. Big shout out to.
She's got a black guy. She don't listen.
Ball player. Yeah.
Hi, Big Ed.
Hey, but real shout out to the greatest racquetball player in the state of Utah, Mr. Ebert. Welcome to the Sunshine State. So.
That's awesome.
Yes.
So speaking of racquetball,
yes,
I was walking in the neighborhood where Studio C is located.
Yeah.
Just last night. There was a car parked in the neighborhood with a Pickleball USA decal on the car.
Nice.
I was like, wow, pickleball's getting big.
Yeah, that's bullshit. Well, you know what? When our robot, our battle bot with the attachment pedal
for the pickleball competition,
it's going to win. It's going to win them all.
Yes.
Yes.
And when, you know.
Not after we win the big nut for BattleBots.
Then we're just going to go and take the pickleball championship of the world.
Yes.
High die.
Yes. So we're throwing all our shout outs to everyone out there. So thank you for listening. Share, like, love.
Go ahead.
And then you can interact with us through our new and improved website, warmbeerthecheapseats.com.
How's that coming? What's going on in the old website?
Well, it's just Big Ed just sending me messages, basically.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do we have our blog up?
The blog is up,
so
yes.
Could, just a question, could we go, could I blog? Could I add a
You can.
Post? Fantastic.
You send me the information. I'll post it on.
You'll post it. I actually signed up to get emails about new blog postings on the website.
I got you.
So, fans, you can do that and interact with us.
Yeah.
I think we have enough plug. I think we plugged enough.
Plug. Yeah.
So let's on with the show.
Yeah. So the first thing, because we do have someone that's coming in later into the show. So in the meantime, so where I live, it's not a golf cart community, but within the city limits of the downtown area of Newport Richey, it's golf cart approved. So you have people with golf carts. And I get nervous for a couple of reasons.
So define this for us lay folks out there. golf cart approved means you can drive a golf cart on the city streets legally without it being tagged.
Correct. It's a like a 1 mile radius of the downtown.
Okay.
And you know, people pump them out. But the thing that makes me nervous about that is it's just going to attract a certain element,
like an outlaw element.
You know, it's bound to happen. You're going to get, older Hell's Angels that can't ride their two-wheelers and they got to go to four-wheelers and then, they're raising hell. You're just trying to enjoy yourself at the outside little bistro and, they come in, move in. And then you see at the other end of the block, it's the Warlocks and their golf carts.
So you're going to have a big turf war.
Turf war. I'm just trying to brunch. I'm just trying to brunch, dude.
So it's like, hey, let's keep it down.
Okay, wait. Hold on. Wait. Oh, all right. Try that again, Jimmy. It happens too quick. That's what she said. All right.
That's what she said. Oh, I'm sorry. Gang, I, excuse me.
Feel free to type that in anytime I set you up, fans.
Big Mike's just a little slow.
Okay. Anyway, so, I'm going to get concerned. Well, I'm just trying to have a mimosa, and I got a turf war going on. I don't want to spill my drink.
We do live in Florida, and there are a lot of retirees in our state. And who's to say, hey, the Hell's Angels, they deserve to retire. And the Warlocks and the Outlaws.
They do. Oh, all right. Here we go. Hold on. You're live on the air.
Hey, guys. Hey, what's going on, guys? How's the
Jimmy,
going?
That would be. Oh, there we go.
I was just curious. Hi, Jimmy. Hey, guys. I was just curious about this golf cart thing. I have a lot of expertise on it. Do you think you're going to get a lot of people from the '90s putting in like ground effects and like undercarriage lighting and stuff like it was in the '90s?
Yeah, no doubt. Like you're going to have guys. They're going to have the hydraulics, and they're going to be on three wheels bouncing around.
See like a donk.
How about spinners?
With 33-inch wheels,
Boys in the Hood style, doing the drive-by.
Yes,
that's pretty cool.
I'm down with that.
That, like you said, that's going to ruin the neighborhood, but it's going to give everyone character.
I'll tell you. The things I've seen in Newport Richie, you normally have to go to a bus terminal in Chicago to see. It's amazing for such a small town.
Newport Richie's a special place.
I saw a lady in a Lazy Boy that was outfitted with four big wheels, and she was just driving around town. I think she had like a rolling ashtray following her, too. It was wild.
That's amazing.
She had an oxygen tank also.
Newport Richie. Like somehow. I mean, it was the most wild thing I've ever seen in my life. I've never seen a powered Lazy Boy, but I was like, you know what? That's a pretty good idea.
I feel like. Could have built in shitter.
It might have a squatty potty with it.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
A little shit pit or something. You know?
So you'd never have to get out of this Lazy Boy. And it could take you wherever you needed to go.
That thing was hauling. Dude.
So you.
Newport Richie is the mayor. Who's the mayor of Newport Richie?
Casey is.
No, I'm not. No, it's incorporated. They have like a little city council and a.
Nothing to do with Kid Rock? Nothing to do with Kid Rock at all?
No.
Okay.
No, but I believe Stacey Dash was arrested for punching a guy in her city like last year.
Well, at least some news.
That's fantastic.
Oh, real quick, Jimmy, your lady friend got into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. How's she taking that?
She's doing wonderful. She's ecstatic. She actually pushed her head through the ceiling, jumping off the couch. It was incredible. We had to call a contractor to fix that, but it's good. The drywall's going to be fine, but her head's fine too. But
now that's excitement.
Yep. Congratulations, Carol King. Now, now that makes me beg to wonder, when will Canada's Carol King get in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? And I'm only talking about the one and only Miss Anne Murray.
Oh, Anne Murray. Yeah.
Yeah. We're going all fucking rock and roll. I'm talking to you, Jan Werner.
But Anne Murray is more of a country artist.
Well, what was Carole King?
I don't know what Carole King was, but I know Anne Murray.
Singer-songwriter, folk. What was it? Like James Taylor. All right, James Taylor wrote great songs, but he didn't plug in an instrument. It's rock and roll. They ruined the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They don't understand what the term rock and roll means.
They're letting everybody in.
I get certain aspects, they don't let everybody in.
That's the problem.
No. But I get the early aspects of hip-hop because, in a sense, they have more in common with punk music than, say, hair metal, because they had that era of they were rebelling against something and creating
absolutely
a new form of music that no one even, you know, it was a new
didn't
landscape.
Exist.
Yeah, when you have the early of Beastie Boys and
exactly. Flash, you guys nailed it on the head.
DMC.
Beastie Boys are in there.
You know, but
yep,
so what
in.
You're telling me,
but not Coolio.
So what you're telling me, there should be a pop music Hall of Fame separate from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the Country Music Hall of Fame and any other Hall of Fame. There should just be like a pop music Hall of Fame for everybody who doesn't really.
I've been saying that for years. They should.
You agree with that, Big Ed?
Absolutely. I mean, there's no reason why Iron Maiden's not in there, you know?
Yeah.
Just an example.
Yeah, they don't deserve, but they'll show up to Brazil and 150,000 people are there. So, yeah, that's not rock and roll. Well, I want justice for Anne Murray. That's it. I don't rest.
Snowbird was a great song.
We freed Britney. Now we're going to get justice for Anne Murray.
Wasn't that her big song, Snowbird? Wasn't that the one? I'm going to look this up because I'm not a big Anne Murray fan. I know.
I think she did Bye Tour and a Snow Dog.
No. I think we're going to the Google machine to get a little, let's see here. Google machine is not helping much. So
it might have been hacked. You know what those gas stations.
It is what it is. It's what
anyway,
it
anyhow.
I had no problem getting gas today. $2.89 at Costco for premium.
$2.75.
Well, you know, where we live, we get it on the pipeline where we're at.
Actually, do we get
No. I'm sorry. I said back. We do not. No. We get it on tankers. So we're not going to get, you know. So everyone in our area just settle down. So people out there that are just like filling garbage bags.
Wait,
fucking retarded.
It is retarded. Who?
Are you kidding me? Garbage
bags. I want you to do that. That's stupid.
That sounds like a show called It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia when there was a gas shortage. They were filling it up in 30-gallon garbage cans and selling it to everybody.
Well, we did have a local, I guess you could say victim or of the Darwin Award. Yes. So I sent this to you guys, Big Ed and Casey, this week. There's a man in Citrus County who had his Hummer H2, and he filled 4 gallon. Yes, it was 4 or 5 gallon. It was 4 or 5 gallon fuel containers up with gasoline, put it in the back of his Hummer. He was leaving the gas station and allegedly lit a cigarette and the vehicle burst into flames. That's a brilliant man, right?
Genius.
There.
Total
again,
genius. Real
again,
man.
That's Florida man. That's Florida man at his finest.
Whew.
And then on top of that, the man refused to get medical attention. I'm sure he was burned because a freaking truck was, you know, charcoal from the picture I saw on the old interwebs. So I don't understand what's wrong with people. The Anne Murray song was Snowbird, by the way. The interwebs did cooperate.
The Google machine worked.
Yeah, that released June 1970. I kind of like that song. It's kind of cute. Anne Murray.
Right.
Anne Murray, as in Murray. M-U-R-R-A-Y.
Oh, my sister's Anne Murray, and I thought
no. Anne Murray. Thanks. You're welcome. Sweet Melissa. So anyhow, that was our local headline, and it was all over. If you went to MSN, it was multiple postings. And again, folks, all of us in Florida aren't that stupid. That's one idiot. So please make note of that. And let's laugh
until next
together.
Week.
And until the guy refused week. To go to the hospital. The paramedics and the fire professionals, the firemen who were there, told the Hummer man to go to the hospital, and he refused. That makes no sense to me.
Well, he probably had like something on him or something.
Probably. It wasn't just a cigarette. Maybe it was a joint. Who knows? It was Citrus County. So.
Inverness,
yeah. So that was a little highlight to the quote-unquote gas shortage, which was self-inflicted, actually. There was never really a fuel shortage. It was just everybody hoarding fuel like they hoarded toilet paper a year ago.
Yeah.
And garbage bags. I heard shopping bags also, like a Publix bag. They're kind of porous. I don't see that being a good container to put anything. Even your groceries aren't really...
Fucking dummies.
Well, you can shit.
How did you not know that gas is going to fucking right through that shit?
Yeah, exactly. Well, gasoline is
fucking golden meathead award.
Solvent.
Can't wait till we can start doing videos. Then we fucking really crack this fucker loose.
Hey, Big Ed, are there any videos of people filling up plastic?
Yeah, there was a lady. She looked to be Asian or Filipino, and she was filling up grocery bags. And then she was like
grocery bag, like a Publix bag,
like triple bagging it. Yeah, something like that. And like she was triple bagging, like, oh, this will really be safe in the trunk of my Honda.
I bet you she doesn't even triple bag when she gets laid.
Yeah, ooh, Jimmy James.
Ooh,
Jimmy Mike.
Jimmy Mike.
That's a real good burn. Real good burn.
Officer Jimmy Mike. Or a cadet Jimmy Mike.
Yes, Officer Jimmy Mike.
Oh.
But
he's a cadet, I think. Just get down and give me 20, maggot. Hey, maggot.
You said maggot, everyone. Maggot. Yeah, because we're
hey,
we're,
maggot,
we're
get me my cigarettes, maggot. Jimmy Mike is in his cadet training right now.
Yeah, for the mall. Like the Mahoney. He's like the Mahoney of his academy.
Jimmy, are you the Mahoney?
He's going to know about the golf carts. He's going to be like,
are you like the Hightower?
I could be Hightower. I like to be Motor Mouth.
Or are you, what was that little, the other guy? The little, the nerdy guy.
Oh, that was always with Bobcat?
Yeah.
Bobcat screaming at
him. You definitely don't want to be OJ.
That'd be fun.
OJ. OJ was a Naked Gun.
Freaking crickets.
Yeah, correct. That is Naked Gun with OJ.
I'd rather be Leslie Nielsen.
Everyone got it.
Or you want to, Jimmy? You wouldn't want to be
nice
Priscilla
Beaver.
Presley.
No, I just had it stuff.
Only if I had that change.
Yeah, the conversion. Get the full conversion?
If I get the full conversion, I guess I had to sleep with Michael. I guess anything's possible.
Anything's possible in this world. That's it.
Mm-hmm. So, folks, thing. When we're talking conversions, we're only talking one thing only, conversion vans.
Exactly.
We're not talking about
the ones with the
boy
captain
girl to bed boy in the conversions.
Back. No. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you get that nice
if you didn't have a nice carriage house
floor conversion.
Definitely
can
a club
you still
wagon.
Buy conversion vans?
Oh yeah,
just see a club wagon. You know that's the way to go.
Nice dude. I think we need a conversion van for the show. Yeah. Do you think the show's budget could?
Oh, we could be like pump up the volume and have a mobile studio.
That would be driving
around. You know what? We could play like conversion. We could play like that dash cam. Not dash cam. What was that? Taxi. We do the questions and the rock and roll, and we make up.
Oh,
different...
you mean
what was that?
What
called?
Was that on HBO?
Jimmy, save all that good material for your show.
Yeah. Thanks, sweet woman.
Oh, yeah. Not Bang Bus, but yeah. Cash Cab.
Yeah. We don't want to do Bang Bus. Although Bang Bus would probably net us more money.
That was a show with children and the wheels on the bus go round.
I'll fill you in later, sweet Melissa, on the Bang Bus.
Jimmy, save that good stuff for your show.
Yeah, no kidding.
So, well, I'm supposed to have someone call in. Apparently, we're getting technical difficulties. Hold on. Stand by. And you know what? Why not? We got someone else live on the show. Welcome to Warm Beer and Cheap Seats.
That's your cue, Trip Fink.
Did we lose her caller? I think that was Trip Fink, but hello, Clarice. No.
Christine, right. 16, oh, are you there? Come in, Christine, 16.
He's there. Just, I don't know. We're not getting the vocal. I don't know if it's a mic issue on your end or
after our
is there a mute button that he's going to look at?
After the miracle of last week, how can this happen?
And how can you call it a mic issue?
Well, your phone does have like a microphone of some sort, I guess you could say. Oh, a mic issue? Oh, thanks, sweet Melissa.
There's a thing at the mic.
Thank you. No such thing.
Kevin Herbert, he knows what the Bang Bus is, huh? He's hip to it.
I'm hip to the Bang Bus. I've seen those videos. I'm not afraid to admit that. Obviously, sweet Melissa.
So is Kevin Hebert. Is that like Bobby Hebert? Or is it Kevin Hebert or Hebert, like Bobby Hebert?
No. He's not Creole.
There's no X's in his name.
Correct.
That's very French.
So Kevin Hebert, okay. But he's still got the password to the Bang Bus.
No,
then all of a sudden it was like, whoop, there's the jizz. There's the jizz.
All right. Just
wow. As we did, we are in rare form and derailing early. I love this derailment early on. Makes it interesting.
You tell that broad to let us do the show.
Hey, do we want to let her? Do we want to let our fans, we relocated in a new portion of Studio C for this evening's show to give our, we're working on better sound quality, gang.
Do you think Bang Bus could be a sponsor?
I don't know. I don't know if, is that still a thing though? Is Bang Bus still a thing?
We could bring it back. They brought
don't these websites back. Have like a, huh? What's that, Jimmy?
They brought the 70s back with the goatees and the MLB. So why can't we bring back Bang Bus?
I just thought it's a web, you know, websites. It's so, you know, their shelf life is very short. So, you know, it might be the thing for a while. Then next thing you know, that's not popular.
Also, it sounds illegal.
No, it's legal. It's just, anyway.
They're just actors.
It's deceptive. Let's just say you're what it is. It's like backroom casting. Yeah, you'll make about $1,000 to $5,000 a day.
Get naked, Tuts.
Yeah. Next scene, you know, she's on all fours and she's getting hired.
Do I have
like
to really do
ball.
This? Yes, if you want to get.
You don't get paid and meanwhile, today, but about 3 weeks.
You know, keep an eye out in the mail. You'll have the check. So, sweet Melissa will fill you in later. I applaud your innocence.
Thank you.
Glad there's somebody innocent on this show. God knows the rest of us are not.
It's all about balance.
I pray for you guys every week.
Oh, there you go.
I need more praying, because boy, I'll tell you what. Yeah, the more the better.
So where's everybody at? Is everybody in the Southern Florida area?
Well, I kind of like Central Florida.
Central Florida. So you guys aren't together tonight.
No, we are.
No, Big Ed's at the Montecito.
Yeah, Big Ed's at the Montecito. Oh. We're here at Studio C. Beautiful Studio C. Doing our thing. Last week, we were remote. This week, we're...
All right,
hold on. We might have a caller coming in.
Fine.
Maybe not.
I don't know what they're trying to do.
Oh. So...
Howdy. Nope. It's there.
15:16, that's your cue.
I'm wondering if they're not set up on the app.
We got a little dead air here.
Yeah. So
if they're not on the app and they don't have their microphone set up.
I can't troubleshoot because the person's not here. Obviously they'd be live on the air, so
Where's the boss to figure this stuff out? Big Ed, where's the boss?
Casey is the boss, Jimmy.
Yeah, but I can't.
No, the producer.
But I can't see. It's the, you mean Petey?
Where's Petey?
Petey?
Yeah. Petey's sleeping in a plant.
What the fuck is he doing?
Petey's swimming.
Petey's just a figurehead, just like the King of England.
I bet he's on BangBus.com.
He just uses resources.
Big Ed,
it looks like he's back on. Trip Fink is back on.
Well, I don't hear a voice.
I just hear our voices.
Well, I would say he's got to check his microphone settings on his phone or see in the app, scroll up and down, if there's a mute button that's possibly hit.
It might not be set up in the app.
No, I don't know. I mean, in my experience before when I did something like this, as a call-in to another show that was on Podbean, when I did the sports show with James and Nico, and we did a live show, I had to have a mic and headphones and kind of thing. But apparently you don't have to. I don't know. So
it depends on how you're logged in. If you're logged in through Google.
Whoa. Hello?
Fans, this is all happening live. This is not edited.
Yeah.
This is live.
You
this is live.
It's pretty cohesive.
AKA radio. Everything's cohesive. We're cohesive.
I feel like we're sleeping like a baby right now.
Oh, this is
we're just
I get it. We shit our pants, we're rolling and tumbling.
yeah, exactly, right? There you go.
That's exactly what he means by sleeping
like
a baby.
All right. Hold on. Everyone's calling in tonight. All right. Stand by. And it's gone. What is with this?
Technology is not cooperating. Yeah. My day at work, technology did not cooperate with me. So this is just the continuation of.
Well, it only gives me like 1.1 second to figure out if I want to let someone call in or not. So I don't know if that's how.
Podbean, if you're listening,
yeah.
Please take notes. Because this is going to be your biggest show. Count
yeah,
on
Big
it.
Big Mike and Casey. Spotify, hey, so, what else is on the agenda tonight?
What is on our agenda, Casey, as we're floundering here?
Well, I did have a big area blocked, but we'll move on from that in a minute.
I
have a bigger issue. The Jesus Guppy had more guppies.
Really? So I didn't know.
So is the Jesus Guppy and the 12 apostles following him around?
That's exactly. There's about 11 more of them now.
Wow.
That appeared.
The apostles.
And the Jesus Guppy now all of a sudden got really slim. So I was like, oh, I guess they have two births or whatever. I don't know. I don't know how that works.
So is Mary Magdalene a part of this too?
Yeah, that's one of the catfish. And that one's definitely a slut.
Hey, whoa. That's all right. Because Jesus Guppy might be okay with that.
I have a Lazarus algae eater that I only see once every 4 months. Every time I assume it's dead,
it comes back.
It just shows up.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we'll see her next Tuesday, so, Mary Magdalene.
Oh, see you next Tuesday?
Yeah, or Thursday.
Yeah. Oh, well. How you doing?
folks, this has just turned to Bible study.
Yeah.
With warm beer and the cheap seats.
See you next Tuesday?
Oh, I don't remember that in the Bible, the see you next Tuesday.
I only learned that not long ago.
Remember, this show has been brought to you by Alaska, where criminals go to die.
Or to hide.
I thought that was Australia.
Yeah, one time.
Florida, for that fact.
Penal colony. Penal. Penal.
This is a penal state.
Like penal. It is penal state. And, hey, fans, it's not like penis. It's penal as in, you know.
Well, I bet you get a lot of that if you're in the penal league.
Yeah, and in the penal colony, you might get many penal situations.
Well, you know, the Indians signed that one pitcher, Wild Thing. He came out of the penal league.
Yeah, he did.
Wow.
Ricky Vaughn. Ricky.
Ricky Vaughn. Ricky Vaughn's a stud, man.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, just let anyone forget, May 11th was the 43rd anniversary of Ted Turner deciding he's going to manage the Atlanta Braves for a day.
Oh, how'd that go?
Wow.
They lost next inning. So what had happened were they were in the middle of a 16-game losing streak. He told the manager, take 2 weeks off, just go home, and I'm going to figure out why our team keeps losing, and I'm going to manage a team for a couple weeks, and then I'm going to give you notes, and then you can resume managing.
So
one of the bench coaches said they were playing the Pirates, and the Pirates were a very good team at that time, and they were managed by Chuck Tanner, and they said Ted Turner kept mimicking anything that Chuck Tanner was doing, so if he crossed his legs, Ted Turner would cross his legs.
Interesting.
Yes. I mean, these are things that you do when you're bipolar. But the next day, and they lost the next innings. They kept the game close. They lost 2-1. The president of the National League, when they used to have that role, each league had a president on top of the commissioner. So the president of the National League called Ted Turner and said, you cannot manage your baseball team. You're an owner. It's actually illegal per baseball guidelines. If you are any type of vested owner, cannot be involved.
So Teddy Boy was breaking the rules.
He did. However, Ted Turner did what George Steinbrenner was never able to do, directly manage the team.
I think it's pretty funny. That's
your Today in Baseball History here on Warm Beer and Cheap Seats. Now,
kind of like Quib.
If our fans were to interact with us, Casey, where would they go?
Well, you can see us on Twitter at Cheap Seats.
Beer Seats.
Shit.
Gang Beer Seats. It's Beer Seats.
All right. All right. We're going to go over this. All right. So we got a listener that's on the message board that wants to know about Tim Tebow and the hullabaloo. I don't want to get into the whole racing because it's so boring and old, and let's just be like, I am a racist, and just say that, and then we just fucking move on with our lives. Look, Tim Tebow, I will say this. Tim Tebow didn't say, like, I won't. He wanted to play quarterback. No one wanted to give him a job, whatever. So he went and played baseball. It's his old college coach that he won 2 national championships and a Heisman Trophy, and he's willing to walk on and try a different position. Hey, he's still going to make the team. If you don't make the team, then so what? I get it. Someone's like, but Kaepernick. But Kaepernick doesn't want to walk on the team. He doesn't want to try out. He wants to give in, you know, whatever, top $1 million and just be given that. Look, so whatever, Kaepernick.
He doesn't want to put the work in.
No. Kaepernick doesn't. Kaepernick's got nothing to lose to say that he's a martyr. He's got
nothing to
lose.
I think he's doing pretty good with it.
Making money, doing nothing.
Yeah, because exactly. So, of course, he's not going to play. And the fact is, he was a one-dimensional quarterback. Other than one season with a college coach that was able to utilize his skill set as an option-run quarterback, he's done nothing but lose in the NFL. I mean, once he played, people figured it out. He played at Nevada, and he was great there. But, you know, he had opportunities to come back.
But Casey, where does he fit in with the Bible study?
Kaepernick?
I don't think you can get down with that, Jimmy.
Oh, yeah, he does get down. Kaepernick gets down.
Yeah, he does his own thing.
He gets down, I'll tell you that.
So that's what we got with Tebow, huh?
Yes. Yeah, so Tebow, he's going to sign with Jacksonville. You know, and Jacksonville drafted not only the quarterback but the halfback from Clemson. So it's going to be pretty compelling there. Urban Meyer, I think, has got a good shot to doing something. You know, they only need a few pieces, and they can be a pretty competitive team. So that's really all I kind of stand on the Tebow thing. I'm like, hey, the guy wants to play. If he can make it, he can make it. And if not, you know, everyone makes everything so dramatic. It's just football. You know, let's just let it be. Yeah, yeah, everyone take a chill pill. I mean, you know,
play I think sports, the whole world enjoy needs it. A chill pill. Well, at least our country with a number of things. Just chill out.
Everything's not always great.
No.
So, no, it's not. People need to calm down.
Yeah.
So, just a little side note here. I don't know who this wrestler here with the
Apollo Crews.
I know Apollo, but who's the other guy? Because he's got like a Marine Corps gunnery sergeant.
Yeah, it's part of his. I don't know, some weird. I don't know. They've been doing some weird storyline with Apollo Crews with this.
So is he supposed to be some like foreign military, but he's got Marine Corps,
correct?
You know, chevrons on his correct. Uniform.
Yeah, they do all goofy stuff.
Yeah. Hey, WWE costume people, let's get your act straight. Just anyway, so just tune in on our Friday Night SmackDown if you fans want to see what we're talking about.
Absolutely. Hey, do we have that one gentleman that does the review on the WWE?
That is our correspondent, the Subway Slam.
Yeah, Subway Slam's not available
right
now.
That's right, Subway Slam.
Yeah, you got to kind of get him ahead of time.
He's a busy guy. He's keeping up with the wrestling world.
Yeah.
And he's probably... I would venture to say Subway Slam is involved in the wrestling world. Just saying. How does he have all this information without being involved in the wrestling world?
He's got an inside track. I heard he's
Subway Slam, if you're listening. What's that, Jimmy?
I think he's got an inside connection with that old wrestler, Ric Flair. I think they talk a lot. I don't know, but
he's got a connection of some sort.
His views are a lot like Flair's.
Subway Slam could be getting his inside info from Flair. Very likely. He's getting it from somebody. We don't deal with, you know, second-rate characters here on Warm Beer and the Cheap Seats. Only top-shelf quality correspondence.
I mean, and the staff, you guys pay the staff very well to do what they do. We're trained professionals.
We sure do. We're trained professionals, I guess.
The best of the best.
I tell myself.
This, look at all the followers on this.
I think so. Thanks, Jimmy.
160 million followers.
I could only 160 million Casey, or is it 16?
Like 16.
Do we have any new followers from overseas?
No.
No new followers from overseas. Hi to my Israeli friends. I hope you're doing okay out there. Whenever you're listening to us, Godspeed. We're for you guys. My UK friends, love you guys. Hope you're doing good. Our Australian friends.
It's going out in like Western Australia too.
Which would be there's
probably a truck driver.
Probably.
Oh, there ain't much on the Western side.
It's going in the wintertime for them on the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah, bundle up.
Bundle up. We're getting hotter than balls up here.
Put on your little kangaroo coat and, you know.
Hey, Big Ed, do you think they leave the tail on the kangaroo coat?
I would.
Is that the end of Bible study?
And the pouch.
It's the end of your segment.
Speaking of kangaroo pouches, I've seen kangaroo ball sack wallets at the flea markets before.
What?
Yes, kangaroo nut sack.
Is that
those
edible?
Things have to be dirty. They're tan. They're tan. It's not like freshly filleted off the kangaroo. It's the nut sack tan.
But that thing's always just sitting in the ground in the dirt. Like those things. That's probably why they're always in a bad mood. They're bouncing on their balls all the time.
If you were bouncing on your balls, how would you feel?
Just like the gummy bears.
Ooh,
hopping
ooh.
Here and there and everywhere. What's that? Their song? Gummy bears.
Yeah. I mean. They smell way too much. I mean, they're bouncing on the balls everywhere.
But wait a minute. Didn't they drink, like, gummy juice? That wasn't just juice. I bet that, like, that shit was spiked with Jack Daniels or something. Do I remember this correctly? They would drink gummy juice, dude.
Did they?
Yeah, they drank some kind of juice.
That what made them bounce around?
Yeah, it was like shots. They were doing Jello shots. And that made them all hyperactive.
That'd be great, like to reshoot that show, and then every time they go drink their gummy juice, you'd hear the song "Shot, shot, 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 shot."
Gummy bears, baby. I heard that. That was
everybody.
Gummy bears. Gummy bears. We're looking up gummy bears cartoon. They gummy juice, dude. Disney's Adventure of the Gummy Bears. Is what it was called.
On a side note, I do have another job, and I have someone that keeps texting me.
From this other job?
Yes.
About what?
A customer. He needs to know some pertinent information on something that's not going to be available for 3 weeks, but he needs to know right now. Look, sir, if I had whatever you had, you can't buy it now. Get a life and settle down. Settle down. That's it. Take your garbage bag of gasoline and go home.
Be careful. Don't spill it. Don't spill it. Don't get in a wreck. Don't light a cigarette. Don't even think about lighting a cigarette. Because that could be dangerous. Very dangerous.
Yes. You're going to go up in flames.
Like the guy in Citrus County. Florida man.
The old Capitol building.
Making us look good. Making us look good down here in Florida. So the gummy bears. Are we going to talk about gummy bears, or are we moving on to...
I kind of got sidetracked. I want to talk about the shows that were turned 20 years old.
Let's go into that. That would be fantastic. So do we have any like bumper music for 20-year-old shows? I'm sure on our awesome soundboard we could find something. Can we get like a spring? Oh, that's the studio audience.
Yes, live in front of a studio audience.
Not really, but yeah, our studio audience.
They that really sounds kind like of more on. Than 16. That sounds like more than 16. Come on.
It's 17.
Whoa.
We pay the studio audience just like Wendy Williams. So,
Wendy Williams farted on air, by the way.
Oh, she definitely did.
Do you guys give CDs a bang bus out there, or is that what you do under their seats?
Yeah, something like, and you get
DVDs. I'm sorry,
you get porn. Everyone gets.
Everybody gets porn. So tell. Let's go.
Yeah, because it's not free on the internet.
Who is having that conversation with you?
Not Oprah. It's warm beer in the cheap seats having that conversation. That is right. So tell.
All right.
TV shows, 20-year-old TV shows.
20-year-old TV shows. All right. And then, you guys could chime in.
Are we going in any specific order?
And just whatever has got in front of me. I got a list.
All right. Let it roll.
So this one, I never really watched the show. All right. Anyways, Alias.
Never watched it. Remember it.
With Jennifer Garner.
She's kind of foxy.
She was a spy. Yeah, this was her first big show.
Just side note while we're talking, gummy berry juice is what the gummy berries drink. Gummy bears drink. Gummy berry juice.
Mm.
a type of magic potion granting the bears the ability to bounce away from their foes. That's all I got on that. Okay, back to our list.
And there was a numbing agent that would make sure their balls wouldn't hurt.
Like the kangaroos. Poor kangaroos.
I never watched Alias. I just remember it was a show that was very critically acclaimed. No one watched, and yet it stayed on, I think, like 6 seasons. It was kind of amazing.
It's pretty good for a show no one watched.
They did horrible ratings, but, I mean, it was good for Jennifer Garner. She had a movie career.
Now she's peddling, what is it?
She's peddling
credit cards?
Ben Affleck's kids around. That's what she's doing. She's peddling Ben Affleck's kids. That's the correct answer. If you were, you know, scoring at home.
But isn't she, like, what is she advertising? Capital One?
Yeah, that's her spend money.
Yeah. From critically acclaimed television.
What's in your wallet? Crippling debt.
I got flies. I got moths in my wallet. Moths. All
right.
I thought they were getting back together.
Oh, is Bennifer back?
Bennifer, she said, frickin' back.
See ya, Alex. Kick to the curb, old Alex.
Well, but you know what? He's going to learn what I've learned. They're exes for a reason. So, but he'll
exactly.
Have fun. You know. All right, next show, a guy that's near and dear to my heart, a Mr. Jack Bauer, 24.
Wow.
Holy 20 goodness. Years old.
Never watched it.
It was a pretty good show.
Unbelievable.
Never. Oh, no. It was
okay,
good.
I have to admit,
great
I've
show.
Never watched it
great
either.
Show. Pretty good.
But Kiefer great Sutherland, show. I've been – people have claimed that I look like Kiefer Sutherland.
You got the Lost Boys Kiefer look.
Do I have the Lost Boys
Kiefer look? Yes, he does. Yes,
look? Yeah.
Big money.
Like, I feel like if I was down by the beach –
yeah, like if he
a
got
hit
by a truck in his
start
face,
start
that
sound.
Would be you.
What about a truck in my face? All right. Oh, do we have a caller?
All right, we got a caller. And
caller, are you there?
Caller, are you there?
Just fell off. Okay, back to 24.
Going to let
next show.
The Amazing Race.
I know the show. I've watched maybe 10 minutes of that show. In 20 years.
It's the Amazing Snooze.
Yeah, I mean, this was kind of following up, Survivor. This was the next big, you know.
Yeah.
The next
reality game. I was working third shift back 20 years ago. No DVR.
For our younger audience, turning 20 years old, Lizzie McGuire with Hilary Duff.
Yeah, never saw that one.
Yeah, no, I was a little too old.
What does Hilary Duff do now? Didn't she have like a pop music career for a while?
Yeah, she did pop music, and I think
she does some cooking network stuff.
I think she does Coke still.
No, I think that'd be
not as in bubbly Coca-Cola.
Yeah,
but
not
as
Pepsi.
She's gone through the training. Coke,
like
she's gone through the training.
She's gone through the training, but she's worked for the Food Network.
Oh.
Snorting Coke? Or was that?
That's what they do on the Food Network. They snort Coke.
All right, here's another show 20 years ago premiered. Fear Factor with the very impoverished podcaster, Joe Rogan.
Now, didn't they do crazy shit on Fear Factor?
Yes.
I've seen them eat cow testicles on Fear Factor.
That's probably the most delicious thing they'd probably eat on that show. They usually had some pretty god-awful things.
You deep fry anything, it tastes good.
Several-year-old eggs.
Yeah.
Like hard-boiled or...
I don't know. It was really gross. That's the only thing I'm like...
What did this several-year-old...
That would be the only segment I can never get by is the weird
gross
food stuff. Yeah.
What did a several-year-old egg look like when it was cracked open?
Black.
Did people actually eat?
One guy did. I mean, one guy vomited, and I think that gets you eliminated.
So you puke, you're done.
Yeah.
So if you hold it down.
If you puke-o, you're donezo.
Wow. That's.
There was an episode I remember watching, and some guy kept mouthing off, you know, and you know, Joe Rogan kind of dressed very loosely, but this guy like trained in gyms, and the guy lunged at Joe Rogan, and Joe Rogan put his hands up, and then they cut the commercial. When it came back, the guy was gone.
Was the show live, or was it?
Can you hear?
I don't know the premise.
Yes, I just heard Trip Fink.
Nope.
I'm here.
Oh, there. Hey. Oh. All right, ladies and gentlemen, from beyond the grave, we have Trip Fink. What's going on there, bud?
Technical difficulties.
Welcome, wow. Mr. Fink.
Yeah, I'd say, man. I mean, this kind of. That's all right.
I just got a call from your agent. He was pretty upset.
I didn't give up.
Well, welcome to the show.
Yeah,
thank
welcome
you for having me. I apologize for this lateness and craziness, but you know, it was just brutal trying to figure this thing out.
Technology's a bitch.
Yeah, and you know, it's not my bag.
No, that's all right. Well, you know what is your bag? What our listeners are going to learn is music, and that's kind of why we wanted to have you on here. You wanted to talk about. I guess the differences between, I guess now and then in the, did you mean like the live playing process?
I think everything.
Recording music?
I think everything. You know, when I started playing live in the 80s, you plugged in your mic through the bass amp and you ran a patch cord through the guitar amp, and that was your speaker system, like an early really? Kinks album or something. And playing live was just about plugging in and playing. And I remember I had two or three pedals, and I was like, this is too confusing with the distortion pedal and the phase thing and the flanger and the wah pedal. And I was like, I gotta simplify this. So I just put it on 11 and kept the wah pedal. And then today you run, it's like a car. A car isn't a car, it's a computer on wheels. So today you got like literally computers running the entire amplifier system, and you have these channel systems that have hundreds of sounds. I had two, you know what I mean? And you made do with it, or you squeaked out.
Now let me ask you this question.
Else.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that's taken away from some of the soul of the music with it being
going
through like a.
Absolutely. How
because
the
now,
hell,
now when, it's not pure, right? Am I right on that?
When you got to bend one note to get seven sounds out of it, but now all I got to do is tap my toe and I get 1,400. What do you think is going to, you know, get more feeling?
Not tapping the toe.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's simple stuff. I mean, the reason why
now it's taking
vibrato and bending strings and Hendrix and Stevie Ray Vaughan and all these things. And even, I mean, I'm just amazed that someone like Tom Morello could come along and that's all he was about, though. He was about plugging in and then making as many sounds as he could with his guitar. Like, how can I make this thing sound like a chainsaw? And then how can I make it sound like a teapot? I mean, he was just like, but he was just working from a wah pedal and being plugged in, and that was it. And that's why he's Tom Morello. Today, I can't even wrap my head around playing a computer. You know what I mean? And I think it's taken a lot away.
The musicianship is gone.
I think it's just taken away. I mean, I watch a ton of guys on YouTube, and there's some great guitarists out there you'll never hear of. I mean, there's still great musicians, but I don't know where music is today with regards to this. I know that I heard in the last 5 years there's a team of songwriters out in Hollywood land, a couple of guys that have written 90% of the top 20 hits in the last 5 years. And everybody hires them, and they have a three-chord sequence, and it's just brutally boring to me. So I mean, no, I
that
feel like
that happens in Nashville, and that happens to pop music too. You know, they
I mean, it's just,
you know, they, so they rely heavily on a few songwriters. You know, I mean, when you had all these different pop stars in the early 2000s, it was the girl from Four Non Blondes was writing all the songs for all of them.
There you go. That's a perfect example. It was just the same shit being churned out. What I don't get today is the, like, I don't see the live ambience that I used to see. I mean, the last band, and maybe it's just my age, but the last band that blew me off the stage, watching them on stage, and I did never see them live, but just watching their show because of their attitude, and it wasn't a big, it's not like Kiss Circa 77, but Oasis was like the last big band that, you know, could fill Wembley Stadium. I looked on Isle of Wight or whatever festival was coming up, and I did this in preparation for the show. Yep. I'm like, oh, let me see who's playing the Isle of Wight festival. I don't even know how these people can stand up live. I have no idea. It's like almost like a rapper with a mic and then the recording behind them. So I have no idea what's going on and how they handle like a real live show. You know, metal may be still like that, but I mean, you know, people are packing stadiums to see Iron Maiden shows. They're not packing stadiums to hear, you know, Seven Dust or I don't even know who freaking, you know, some new.
Yeah, but they
new
have band. To put like 14 bands on the bill in order to get what Iron Maiden does in one night.
Yeah, I mean, literally. And that's
that's why they have festivals.
You know, because I don't think there's an act out there today that could sell like an Appetite for Destruction and just come out of the gate and sell 8 million albums. You know, I don't even. Where is that? Where
well,
is that?
Well, the music industry changed. No one sells albums anymore.
Yeah, that's the other thing I wanted to mention about the industry when it comes to, you know, we were sitting there printing tapes, you know, and selling them out of the trunks of our cars, and now you just throw your shit up on YouTube, and it's like either you get a million hits or you don't. I just can't jive with that, because it was, for us, it was about being out there and getting hammered with the crew, with the crowd, with the people. Now, there were some nights we would literally, we could empty half the club, right? I mean, we had a couple of nights like that. But there was, but the half that stayed, you know, like would literally rush the stage. I mean, you're either gonna have a really good show or a really bad show, that in our case. But I mean, we had some shows where, you know, you get off the stage and that's what you wanna do. You wanna hang out with the people that are there, because you're there to hang out. Just cause you're up on stage playing, that's just another reason for me to get drunk and hang out with my pals, you know what I mean, with my boys. And it was just like, hey, we're now playing Trip a show Bank tonight. Let's go get hammered, you know what I mean?
Well, here, fill me in, because I'm coming in here and I don't know you other than this phone call. Fill me in a little bit about your band. What was your first show, you know, for somebody like me and our other listeners out there? And, you know, that way we have like a point of reference to your stories, okay? Because I think your stories are going to be pretty interesting. So take it away, brother.
It was I'd come back from Florida. I was living in Tampa for a few years, and I came back from Florida and I went to New York. And I was in a bunch of little bands, you know, and did some recordings, and we were on WBMB back in the day in Long Island. And when I got back from New York, I rented a warehouse, and I moved into the warehouse. No heat, no. I mean, I lived in a warehouse, right? So that was then I had no excuse except to play. And so I put a band together with a couple of guys I know, and at least had been introduced to, and it was at least like, let's get started. And we got a groove, but we didn't know a lot of stuff. So we just went up the road to get a show. And I told the guy, look, we're never going to do sets. We're not that band. And that was my attitude from day one. And so the first show we ever played, I don't remember, it was like that house bar on 25A up from Gyrodyne in St. James, New York in Long Island. And we played 3 hours nonstop, and we knew 7 songs.
So you played seven songs for 3 hours.
No, like Blues Brothers. We literally played like the Grateful Dead. It was like taking a 3 minute song and making it into an 11, 12 minute jam. And then the whole
you maximized.
Yeah, we were a jam band to start because we didn't, and we were really bluesy, and it was like Sabbath meets the Doors, right? And that's where we started playing shows just to play nonstop, just to play. And so I'd go to the bar and hang out and have a couple cocktails, and the bass and drums would keep going. Then I'd come back, and the bassist would go and have a couple cocktails or smoke or whatever. And it was just, we just kept going. And that was our first show. It was pretty incredible. And then we went back, we started tightening things up. And as we wrote more songs and rehearsed, then we went into the city. And the city is a whole different scene, because in the city, they're booking five bands a night. They did this at the Roxy on Long Island and stuff like that. But you're booking five, six bands a night. Everyone has 45 minutes. You have 15 minutes to get on and get off the stage. And us, we were like, we walked into the bar, half in the bag. And then we just like plugged in and jammed, you know. So when we went to the city, we were blown away, because these guys were like, you got to tighten up. And we went and we played CBGB's. We auditioned. They used to hold auditions on Sunday afternoons. So we get all banged up and go and play CBGB's. And then the guy goes, you guys are great, but you're never going to go on stage unless you tighten this shit up. So then we went back to Long Island and we're like, all right, what do we need to do? We need to take these jam sessions and make them 3 and 4 and 5 minute songs and tighten up. And then that's what we did. So we got out of the warehouse and we went into a bedroom, because there's nowhere. I just needed to consolidate. We just needed to really get tight and get out of the Saturday night jam attitude. So then we really tightened up the shows, the music, and got tight, like Metallica tight, where, you know, you could be hammered out of your head and you didn't have to wing it, because your fingers were just going to do exactly the same thing every time. And that became, we just became better musicians that way. When I formed the band, I couldn't sing and play guitar at the same time. I knew I wanted to play and sing, and I had other guitarists and I had others, but I couldn't. So I was writing these songs that were really loose, like you'd hit the chord and then sing, and then hit the chord and then sing, like the Doors would do, like Jim Morrison would do. And it was like, well, everyone was like, wow, that's a really cool groove. Well, it's a really cool groove because I can't play and sing at the same fucking time. You know what I mean? But then after we tightened up and we worked, then we were jamming in the city. And then we recorded our first album, and then we recorded our second album at Glen Cove Studios in Long Island. And that's where things really exploded for us, because once we tightened up and we were playing songs in 45-minute sets, then we started, you know, winning Battle of the Bands and getting headline slots in all the clubs in the city. And that's how we did it. We went from a jam band to a real band, you know.
What was an album? There had to be an album you listened to there, Trip, that made you want to be like, you know, I want to be able to play that. Was there an album you got that?
Well, I can tell you the most influential moment of my entire life was the Paul Lynde Halloween special circa 1977. And I had just come okay. in. I had just come in from trick or treating, and we're down in the basement and we're counting our candy and we're watching the entertainment.
Did you go as one of the banana splits?
And the musical guest was Kiss. And when I saw that show, I turned to my friend Phil Perry and I said, that's what I want to do when I grow up.
Nice.
And it was from that moment on. Then I got into the Stones and Keith Richards, and it was off and running after that. So that was really pivotal to me. The number one, I think the album that blew me away as far as albums go was probably Beggar's Banquet. There was such a feel about Beggar's Banquet where you could just grab an acoustic guitar and play Salt of the Earth, or you could take, you know, Samba drums and play Sympathy for the Devil on Volume 11. It was just a cool album that melted right into me.
Where's the first concert you've been to? Like, you know,
Zebra.
Going to a show.
Zebra.
Nice.
I went to Zebra open for Loverboy, and I left during Loverboy because I went to go see Zebra. And then the second show go ahead.
Well, I was going to say for our fans that listen, Zebra is a band. You're going to have to go to the Northeast to see them. They kind of stay out, you know, in shallow waters, but they were a Long Island band, you know, put out some studio albums, but they had a pretty good reputation as being a fantastic live band.
They were awesome. And Randy Jackson is like the consummate professional.
He's still doing his thing on the island.
Yeah.
With Zebra and by himself. It depends on, I guess, what he's got going on.
Yeah, absolutely. He's always a phenomenal voice musician. I don't know why they didn't get bigger. Atlantic kind of put him in the back seat because they had other acts to focus on. And that's the other thing about the industry. The industry, when we got a record contract, we were told, all right, here's, you know, you're going to get $250,000. That's going to pay for two albums, all your equipment and tours, and whatever's left over is up to you, right? And if you don't get traction like out of the gate, they're not even going to put up a poster for you. They already know that $250,000 at the time is a tax write-off, and like a venture fund or a hedge fund that looks for the Facebook, you know, or looks for that one trade that's going to – they do that with 20 bands a year. They throw a couple of bucks at them, throw them in the studio, see what clicks, and then they back that one band. So we didn't get
to well, you know, I mean, music studios, I mean, have been mostly been run by people that were obsessed with power or gangsters and not people that are passionate about music outside – maybe, you know, you get your exception, like an Amit Erdogan. But otherwise, I mean, you know, I mean, those studios are run by bozos. They don't have an ear for music.
No. I mean, when we were shopping our demo, that's what an AR guy is all about. And an AR guy, you know, you can go to work for, or you used to be able to go for, you know, TNT Records or some subdivision of Geffen or something, you know, some indie, quote unquote, indie label that's actually just a subsidiary. And you can meet the AR guys, and they're 18 to 24 years old. That's it.
What's an AR guy?
He's the guy that shops for the bands that goes and brings them to the suits. The suits are the guys that sign the contracts. They're the guys you're talking about. But the AR guys are the guys that go out, like, an, you know, they go to every club every Saturday night, and they're looking for the next, they're looking for bands. And so they have this army, they used to have this army of, you know, young dudes that you could just hang out with and get hammered with and be like, dude, here's my demo. And get an intro to them, and they come and see your show. If they liked you, you went up the line. If you couldn't get past an AR guy, you were out of gas. But if you got an AR guy to like you, then you went up to the up the line. And then if that went further, then the suits, you know, they would, based on what the AR guys would be telling them, then they would come down and see the band and meet the band and stuff like that. So I got, you know, we got to the point where we were having brunch. I love the way you guys were talking about brunch before. Because I remember going to a brunch at the top of some building where the, you know, the restaurant spins around or some bullshit. And I was spinning around, and it was, you know, like, or you can drink champagne at the brunch. And after five bottles of champagne, the maitre d' like came over to cut me off. And I'm like, fuck you. this is all you can drink, and I'm drinking. And the suits were just like, and I'd been through five bottles of champagne.
That guy at a Chinese buffet, you know?
Yeah, and the suits were just like, this guy's out of control, you know? And they're literally in suits. And, you know, I look like the Black Crows meet the Black, you know, meet Black Sabbath, you know? So it was pretty funny.
No, that's good. That's good. So, all right, here's the thing. All right. You had an EP. It was called The Bathroom Rug Motif.
Yeah.
Correct on that one?
Yeah.
Do you have any tapes of that ever exist of that?
I don't have any tapes. I have two songs of that demo. Only two out of the five we recorded, I think, I have on my computer. How they stayed with me all these years, I don't know. And I don't have any tapes. I think Clayton back in the island has one. I think Clayman has one.
Okay.
And I know my old manager. My old manager, I think, has a copy too. But I haven't spoken.
I had one. I was able to get my hands on one. And I mean, in many, many moons ago, as that came out, and then it disappeared, and it really upset me. And so upset.
Well, I want to thank you because I've heard, you know, you've really dug the Chip Fink, you know, all these years you've dug the tunes and everything, and you know,
absolutely,
I really appreciate it. I guess I never really said that, but thank you. And you know, Lou, your brother, he wrote a letter to me. I was actually in a place where I had chosen to stay for about 30 days and at the time. And he wrote me a letter, and I took the first lyrics of that and then wrote a song around those lines. And that became one of the songs on that Bathroom Rug Motif, Letter from a Friend. Letter from a Friend,
yep,
is literally a letter from Big Ed.
Yeah, from the legend, Big
from
Ed.
The legend.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool. That was pretty
cool. Yeah, no. Listen, we'd love to have you come back at some time, and we can circle around, talk some music, and you know, pick your brain on a couple other things. We kind of threw this a little together quick tonight, and we had some technical difficulties, but thanks for hanging with us.
Thank you for having me. I really do appreciate it, and I look forward to joining you guys again.
We hope so. It would be good because we'll have a whole slew of
subscribe and share, and, you know,
all that good shit.
Twitter. Mike, Big Mike, what's our Twitter?
It would be Beer Seats. Follow us at Beer Seats, Casey. Beer Seats.
All right, Trip. Take care there, bud.
Take care. Thanks for joining us.
Guys, thanks so much, man. Peace, good night, and up the irons.
That's right.
Rock on, brother.
Up in the irons.
Yeah. In layman's term, he's saying justice for Anne Marie.
Yeah. Snowbird.
So up the irons.
Yeah, that's exactly what that translates to.
All right. With that said,
we are coming into.
Wait, hold on. Hold on. No.
I think mine is better than the soundboards. Big Ed's Rock and Roll Retrospective.
All right, guys. This kind of spins off from last week's Poco. I did another country rock band, which really was a psychedelic band, but I'm telling you, this is a gem. I didn't start listening to this till probably like 25 years ago. The Grateful Dead, American Beauty. It piggybacked right after Working Man's Dead, that definitely defined the Dead as songwriters, you know, and not just psychedelia. 4 months after the Working Man's Dead was released, they released American Beauty. American Beauty is the fifth studio album by the Grateful Dead. It was released November 1st by Warner Brother Records. The album continued the folk rock and country style music. It was recorded in Wiley Helder Studio in San Francisco. It's 42 minutes long. Like I said, it was a Warner Brothers label produced by the Grateful Dead. American Beauty entered a Billboard chart, the 200 charts, peaking at number 30 during a 19-week run in January of 71. July 1st, 74, it was certified gold by the recording industry, the RIAA, and later reached platinum and double platinum certification in 86 and 2001. In 2003, the album was ranked number 258 on Rolling Stone magazine's list of 500 greatest albums of all time. And in 2012, a revised list, it was up to number 215 on that list. Look, any other Dead album by any other name would not smell as sweet as the old American Beauty. The band returned to the studio 6 months after the breakthrough Working Man's Dead to record a new collection of songs, written this time by various members in collaboration with lyricist Robert Hunter. Robert Hunter, real quick, this guy's got a pretty big resume, but he knew Jerry Garcia before Grateful Dead. They were in another band, so they were friends throughout his career and wrote various songs together. The results of this are the strongest of their short career at this time in 1971. Box of Rain, Friend of the Devil, Sugar Mangolia, Ripple, Truckin'. All of these were staples of their live show for the rest of their career. These songs, this whole 8 of the 10 songs of this album were played at every live show for the rest of their career. It just shows you what kind of effect it had on the band and their fans. Yeah. So if Working Man's Dead was a revelation, American Beauty was paradise found. Instruments intertwined like DNA strands. Voices creaked like comfortable sneakers, like old gloves. Piano and pedal steel provide the perfect punctuation to Hunter's lyrics and poems. The entire album rolled easy with a deceptively loose feel and the artistry underneath. This is a great album that flows from start to finish. You can't just listen to one song. You got to start on Box of Rain and work all the way through to Trucking. American Beauty, that stands for, is the pinnacle of the band's first phase and for the money, the finest album they've ever recorded. Just like I said, over 4 months to 6 months after Working Man's Dead, Phil Lesh, who's the bass player in his autobiography, Searching for the Sound, commented, "The magnetism of the scene at Wally's recording studio made it a lot easier for me to deal with the loss of my father." The Box of Rain was written for Phil Lesh's father, and it was his way of dealing with his death. It's a real beautiful song. Some of the best musicians were hanging around the studio at that time. Paul Kantner, Grace Slick from the Jefferson Airplane, The Dead, Santana, Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young were there. American Beauty focused more on the major key melodies and folk harmonies that influence of, like, from Dylan and studio neighbor and friends, Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, later explained that the singers in our band really learned a lot about harmonizing from Crosby, Stills, and Nash, who just released their Deja Vu album. Jerry Garcia, who played pedal steel guitar on that album with Stephen Stills. So these guys used to run around in the same circles and party all the time, so some of their influences you'll hear on each other's albums in that era. The Dead had a mutual admiration for one another in Crosby, Stills, and Nash. They admired the musicianship and Crosby, Stills, and Nash admired the Grateful Dead's musicianship. The Grateful Dead admired the way Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, they harmonized. So there was, you know, a natural admiration, and they helped each other out through the early parts of their career. So the track listens, all these songs are written by Jerry Garcia and Robert Hunter, except there are a handful. Box of Rain was written by Phil Lesh, the bass player. Operator was Ron McCannon, who was also known as Pigpen. Eight songs, excuse me, 10 songs. They all just flow from, you guys listen to this, right?
Yes. This is, I love this album. This is next to, I like Working Man's Dead would have to be my favorite Grateful Dead album. This is the, my number two favorite Grateful Dead album. My favorite song on the album being Box of Rain. That's my fave.
It was really, in Phil Lesh's autobiography, he talks about how he wrote this song, driving back and forth in the hospital weekly while they were in the studio recording this album. Him and Robbie Hunter wrote the Box of Rain to help him deal with his father dying of prostate cancer. Let's see. So this is going to be my take. American Beauty is like a meditation or a solitary swim in a cool, clear lake. Bassist Phil Lesh earned a rare songwriting credit for Box of Rain, the heartbreaking opener whose melodies he wrote to sing to his father as he died of prostate cancer. It is Hunter's dreamlike image might stand for the, the epiphany of the present moment or life itself. Again, the band goes out of its way to avoid presenting its wisdom as something certainly a compulsory. Just and there's a quote to lyrics, just a box of rain, wind, water, believe it if you need it. If you don't, just pass it on. Hunter conjures similar impossibilities across the album, lights that no eyes can see, tunes that play on harps unstrung, ripples emerging from water without pebbles to cause them. The album's simplicity and campfire warmth make it approachable to newcomers, even as it embodies the spiritual yearning that turns people into lifelong followers. It is an ideal gateway album. I stole that little phrase from somebody. I loved that term. That was a gateway for like more country gospel, because if you listen to this, I think it's a very spiritual. There's such a healing to that if you listen to this album and you're just feeling distraught. So catching lightning with an album as perfect and as excellent as Working Man's Dead is a once-in-a-lifetime achievement. The Dead, however, followed up just a few months later with an album that virtually every Deadhead considers its equal. 10 songs, nearly all of which become cornerstones in the band's live repertoire for the next 25 years. I've read a lot of other reviews from its release compared it to Working Man's Dead and not to focus on what this is about, the music. Here are 10 songs that are the simplest form, are almost spiritual experience, and gives you the feeling of total relaxation and ease of whatever's ailing you. This album is good for what ails you, and you'll sleep better and manage your day knowing that there is an American Beauty to come home to. And it just takes the edge off your day and cure whatever is up your craw. In closing, the older I get, the more I appreciate the Grateful Dead. But I never had trouble appreciating this album. It's because it is perfect. Great music, great lyrics, a band at the height of their abilities, a must listen for any real music lover. And that's all I have to say about this.
Nice. So what's the rating, Big Ed?
This is like a 4. This is
Wow. We haven't had one of those in a while.
See, I would think, in my world, Poco would have had the 4. This would have had the 3 in my musical taste. But I get it. But, 4. I'm impressed.
Yeah, but this is coming from a metalhead, This is... Do you know this song? We used to Ripple was the closing song at the end of church every Sunday.
Ripple was. Right?
Ripple.
Right? Yeah.
I heard Ripple. Church
there
too.
So.
Yeah, I know. Oops, I did it again. Yeah, it's a good church song. Thanks for sharing.
I'm familiar with this album. I'm not a big Grateful Dead guy. However, I've been a fan of this album. But... Grateful Dead's known more, obviously, they have a live show. They had people follow them around. There's a whole weird subculture about that, which I think in the end detracts from some of what was good about Grateful Dead. But I don't think they helped with the, deterring people from getting just absolutely twisted at all their live shows. And I think they kind of partake in that lifestyle. But, I could say Box of Rain, Friend of the Devil, Trucking, Ripple. I mean, these are great songs. Again, it's an album for me personally. I like it. It's got a fun flow to it.
It just showcases all their abilities as musicians and songwriters.
Yeah, you know, this was Grateful Dead at the best, and definitely in their peak, because Skeletons from the Closet. There was like another studio album that's pretty big at the time. I mean, I think there was a live album. 87,
I think, was the one with A Touch of Grey you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, that's later on. That's a good review. I like your intake on that, Big Ed. I mean, I think this is an album that another generation could gloss over, but I think they should definitely listen to if they have.
I agree. And at me being a country rock guy, this is one that I'm chasing on vinyl to add to my album collection. And this
if you would like to donate one and get the shipping information for Big Mike, it's the show at warmbeerandacheapseat.com.
That'd be awesome. Send it to me.
I'll give you $10 more than the donation price, which is free. So how's that?
That's awesome. This is one I'm chasing.
Yeah, I think this is one of those albums. When you listen to it, if you come home and you're just pissed or something happened and you put this on, when the Box of Rain hits, it's like this calmness starts coming over you. And it just keeps soothing you all the way through for 42 minutes. It's like a mental massage for me. There's something about this that just, you know, when they say music calms the savage beast, there's a lot of truth when you listen to this. It's such a calming to this.
It's definitely quintessential, like, San Francisco music sound of that time. You know, if you capture a sound of an era of a region, you know, 68 to 72, I mean, this is it. I mean, you know, you had them in Jefferson Airplane, you know, I mean, that was your San Francisco sound.
Now, let me throw this in here, too, coming from my weird genre of music of country rock. I'll tell you another band that was coming along right now at this same time period was a spinoff of the Grateful Dead, the New Riders of the Purple Sage, which was a full-on country rock band. You listen to a lot of their very early albums, they sound like Grateful Dead albums.
There were some Grateful Dead musicians in there. And
well, you know,
the same guy, Robbie Hunter, that wrote. There are a lot of crossovers in those bands, Poco, you know, Buffalo, Springfield, Grateful Dead, New Riders of the Purple Sage, and the Flying Burrito Brothers were all kind of from that same.
Oh, they're all intertwined.
You know what I said? Right. You know what I said? They were at this studio and I had such a writing vibe because Dylan was there and Crosby, Stills, and Grace Slick. These are all the same people doing New Riders of the Purple Sage, Burrito Brothers, and
I love the Burrito
Poco
Brothers.
And all these other, So next time you listen to that, look at the album sleeve and look at the guys that produced, engineered, wrote, and you'll see there's a commonality in all five of those.
You know what's weird? It's like, you know, 30 years later, that happened in Seattle. That happened in Seattle, the whole rock scene. There were interchangeable artists between Alice in Chains, Mother Love Bone, you know.
Hair of the Dog. What was that? The one?
Oh, Temple of the Dog, and, you know, Pearl Jam.
Temple of the Dog. Yep. That was it.
There's a documentary. And it kind of goes following more the ups and downs of Sub Pop, basically the big music label out there in Seattle, but it's called Hype. I recommend it. It's probably on Amazon Prime, but like you're talking about, like these guys hanging out in studios, that's the culmination of the Seattle sound getting to the peak, but at the same time that Sub Pop couldn't keep the artists anymore because they were too big, is with Pearl Jam in the studio recording Vitalogy, and everyone that was everyone in Seattle was in the studio while they're like recording it. You're like, and then a lot of guys, it's kind of sad now. You're looking back like, that guy's dead, that guy's dead, that guy's dead. But, you know, it was kind of cool. Like, they were just all kind of cheering. They were just kind of cheering each other on. So, I don't know. It's kind of, they're all fans of each other.
Cool how the music industry, well, it's certain
click.
Sometimes it's
competitive, yeah. But sometimes they're like just fans of each other, man.
Sure. And they
the swinging in London 60s sound.
Trick just chimed in and said that the same with the metal scene in the early 80s in L.A. Just what I described and then what you described. So 70s, 80s, 90s is happening every decade with just different genres of music.
Now, what scene I'm curious about is what's happening at the good old Waffle House. What tunes do our Waffle House friends have?
Oh, man. Well, they've been getting a chunk full of Earth, Wind, and Fire, Boogie Wonderland.
Wow, great song.
Yep, you know, that goes good. Like, the shorter the cook, he's like getting in. He's like, I'm covering, I'm smothering, and do-do-do-do-do-do, you know. That's as far as I can come that tune without Spotify kicking out
the exactly. Yeah. Wow, that's solid.
Yeah, so we're just going to stay in disco.
We're going to stay in disco mode. We're going to stay in the late 70s for a little bit.
And then there was a question about the faxing. I wanted to cool it off because a couple people had been missing out of work. So I don't want to play a hand, but I want to be able, I can throw someone else under the bus so I can make sure they're available in the first text or... It's basically me a fax saying, have you missed me?
Wow.
So, you know, it's going to narrow that search down to a couple people immediately.
So to catch our fans up to speed, this is at your day job.
I found that we have 4 fax machines on the property. So I fax messages to one particular manager, you know, like, I'm watching you and, you know, I know what you did last summer, and do you like scary movies? Basically stuff like that.
And he has not yet caught on.
No.
And now that you have people back, you now can dodge the claim that it's you. Lack of a better word, I'm losing it.
Look, you need culpable deniability. That's important.
You can go, hey, I think it was this guy. I think it was Jimmy Jack who was doing it.
Listen, these are life lessons, folks. I'm trying to teach you. There is a way. Now, I don't want to give out too much because it's going to be, again, my first self-help book. It's just that easy.
To fall in love?
No. It's just that easy. That's just... It's a lifestyle just like of doing things. It's just that easy. And, you know, and then my idea is I'm going to do a book tour and then we just, it's just that easy. It's just that easy. It's just that easy. So then my second book is Think Like a Cat. It's going to help you get in the right mindset to attack daily challenges.
Wow.
I have a third book planned, no title. Fourth book is going to be a child's. It's going to be a children's book. It's going to be called Take Your Fucking Ball and Go the Fuck Home.
Can you use fuck on a child's book, children's book?
Well, parents do every day, so of course I can.
All right.
Let's not kid her.
You know what else you can do? You can tell them.
Hey, let's not act like we don't say fuck in front of kids, okay?
I say it in front of my nephew, and, you know.
The same nephew who gave the finger in a family photo.
Yes, he did. That's a story for another day.
Okay. Uh-oh.
And that nephew got straight A's, by the way. He's on principal's honor roll. I got the photo evidence of it this afternoon. This nephew did have a big middle finger in a family photo. And yours truly, Big Mike, got blamed. That's a story for next week.
All right. Thank you for everyone. I want to say thank Jimmy for calling in.
Good trip, Fink. Thank you, Trip Fink.
We're going to have you back. Yeah.
Big Ed, thank you, as always.
So. All right. All right. Any final words there?
I guess this is it.
No. All right, all I gotta say is thanks everyone for listening. Check out our website, Warm Beer and Cheap Seats. Check us out on Twitter, look it up. I don't know, Google it. Google everything about us, interact, share, share, and share.
Share and share. And hey, put the hashtag Big Mike Rules on this stuff. It'd be awesome.
Yeah, let's get that trending.
Hashtag Big Mike Rules, because I think I do.
And don't forget, Justice for Ian Murray.